Nerdology is now presented by Sardine, and I couldn't be more excited. You'll get to meet their founder, Supes, and some of the team later this quarter, and you'll hear a bit more about why they've caught the attention of some of the smartest fraud leaders I know throughout crypto, fintech, financial services, and e-commerce. Thanks again to Sardine for supporting this episode of Fraudology. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Fraudology Podcast, where we dive into the science and study of online fraud from the perspective of an e-commerce fraud fighter. I'm Carice Hendrick. Today's episode is the conclusion of my conversation with Calvin Tiwari and Sriram Bhattaru of Booking.com. I really hope that you enjoyed Tuesday's episode where they talked a bit about themselves and how they got where they are now. They advocated for product managers and why it's so helpful to have a product manager support fraud operations and strategy. I tend to agree. Really appreciated them sharing their reasons for that. They also shared the first part of their theory or their, conclusion that they came to after their own fraud technology journey, that really fraud technology should be assessed on an S curve and not just assumed that progress will be a straight line and forever and into infinity. So on today's episode, you'll get to hear them go through the other three stages of a fraud operations and fraud technology journey, and you'll get to hear their tips for how they suggest that you make the best of each stage. And I just really hope that this is the type of episode that helps inspire you to think about other parts of your own fraud technology journey and how you can apply some of the things that Calvin and Sriram are talking about to your own fraud technology journey. I also want to say that they will both be attending MRC Vegas, March 25th to the 27th, as will I. So if you are already planning on attending or if you were thinking about attending, just know that you can have a chance to meet with both of them. I will put a link to their profiles on LinkedIn on the show notes. I do ask no solicitations because of that. They are just great humans, as you have heard on Tuesday and are about to hear again. And I just really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do too. So the next phase is kind of that acceleration phase, right? It's Sriram, can you kind of walk us through that acceleration phase and what that looks like?
So the second phase, as at the end of the initial phase, when you reach sufficient critical mass, you enter the acceleration phase, which is a steep slope of the S-curve. So as the technology matures, breakthroughs occur and leads to rapid improvements in performance, efficiency, and adoption. This phase is marked by exponential growth and significant advancements in performance and delivery of improved fraud results. This is characterized by rapid growth of predictive models or fraud signals or new rules being set up using velocity features and other derived features from raw data that you have collected. And you also start seeing optimized returns on investment on third-party solutions if you went the buy route by buying a third-party solution. In terms of impact on your KPIs, you start seeing reducing fraud rates and improvement in false positives. And you also start seeing these metrics start influencing the level of trust that the fraud team has within the organization, because people start trusting your product's performance, your process performance, and then it helps build the narrative that the fraud team is able to keep things under control, and I think they are going to help us achieve better customer performance in the future.
That's such a good point, right? Once you've implemented a solution, whether it be internal or third party, you are going to see some big payoffs at the beginning because you're addressing the fraud that you're seeing right now, and it's putting it, stopping it. And hopefully it's also providing clarity to what those good orders look like so that you are starting to see a higher acceptance rate as well. And a higher approval rate.
I wouldn't call this the acceleration phase. I'll go back to my way of speaking. I call this the fun phase, right? This is when, for the fraud folks in fraud prevention, you're celebrated. You're a hero now, right? You were once a villain, and now you're paraded around as a champion, right? So this is really genuinely a fun phase because things are working. If you've hired a consultant like Carice, this point in time is when the things start paying off because you're actually leveraging best practices. If you've started collecting data earlier on, you're going to be able to, you have enough data now, you can leverage this data. If you've implemented a vendor solution by now, their performance is also improving because they've implemented properly. They understand your problem more. So this phase is characterized by a lot of these kind of improving metrics. Overall, holistically, things are going to look very good. But not to be, not to change the mood, but I'm here to remind people that we're on a curve and things go away over time. These benefits are going to change. So we also have to think about the next stage and start getting ready. So in this good phase, when you are celebrated as a hero, you should start thinking, what can I ask for now, right? So some of the tips, for example, that we want to share in this phase is lay these foundations. Take advantage of these foundations that you're building, right? Those good relationships with the stakeholders now, you're going to want to keep that momentum going. Right. You want to give them this vision that, hey, we don't stop today. I know we've seen the chargeback rate, or we've seen us get out of a fraud program, let's say, but it doesn't stop there. We can help the business by decreasing the actual cost. It's not just about removing yourself from a program or regulatory risk. We can impact the profitability of the company so we can go further. Right.
Yeah. A lot of times the rest of the business, because in other parts of the business, usually it's you have a problem, you fix it, you get better, we celebrate, okay, good, we'll just keep going. But other parts of the business don't have those adversaries that are targeting it, and they aren't just going away, right? Fraudsters aren't saying, okay, well, they patched that gap that I was, you know, exploiting, and so I'm just going to go somewhere else. I mean, some will, but the ones that are really motivated, the ones that have already monetized your products, they're not going away so quickly. And so while you're being celebrated in your company, oftentimes the fraudsters are out there going, well, where are the other gaps? What are the other things? How can we attack this new vendor that they've implemented? Oh, well, we can know who that vendor is because of GDPR. They have to put it in their terms of service that they're, you know, giving them their customer data. Or we can use developer tools to see which APIs are being called. To your point, Calvin, and it's such a good one, while you're being celebrated in the company and while you're putting out these reports and saying, look at these metrics, you know, look where our losses due to chargebacks are down, you know, revenue due to accepting more orders is up. You know, there's far fewer calls to customer service complaining about our side of the fence and what we're doing, instead of just saying, okay, that's it, we're great, knowing that there's more to come. And sometimes I struggle with this with my clients where they're like, okay, cool, we're done. And I'm like, actually, you should probably keep me on just, you know, for a lot less time, you know, but just kind of as a phone a friend, because there's going to be more coming. And we need to implement that long-term phase. We still, yes, we implemented that short-term and maybe that medium, you know, that kind of, you know, put in some changes. But remember that long-term phase that we have a longer list of things to do. We need to start working on those and, you know, starting to lay those foundations, as you said, in having those conversations, right? Okay, we've gotten some credibility and we've earned some credibility from, you know, other departments. Let's use that to say, we're excited too, but we know that another shoe is going to drop soon. We know that that fraud's going to go up a little bit. So we need to be preparing for that too.
And I can also add, like, at this stage, it's also important to understand, like, you are in the growth phase, but as Calvin mentioned, like, it might not stay forever. So this is a great opportunity for at least the product managers to start modifying the KPIs and understand, like, what the next generation need is for the company. So as fraud becomes less of a problem, customer experience improvement becomes more important to focus on. Because if you're not retaining, if you're not engaging with your customers enough at this stage, you're going to lose them. And then a leaky bucket is something that's going to create a huge impact on your revenues for an online marketplace, right? In general, I think it's very important to continuously assess the current setup of the products and processes and benchmark them against industry best practices to make sure that you are staying ahead of the fraudsters, you're staying ahead of the game, and making sure that you have the truly state-of-the-art fraud solutions deployed to tackle the problem of fraud.
Any other tips that you have for this phase, for online companies that are at this phase, whether they're a bank or a fintech or, you know, an e-commerce company like yourselves? What are some other, do you have other tips at this phase, or are we moving on to the next one?
I think I can share one last tip before we move on, and that's just to continuously assess how you're performing in the current setup versus not just your previous metrics. So you don't want to be having this siloed view, but go outwards because you have some breathing space now, right? Typically, this is when you're having fun.
Less fires.
Speak with other industry experts. Yes, less fires. unless you like that kind of thing. But yeah, you go out and get those industry reports, speak to other fraud prevention professionals, really be critical of how you're doing versus those best practices. I think this is something that's important to do in this phase.
Yeah, and to talk with other, with your peers who have already been through this phase, to talk with companies that are similar to yours, you know, that whether they're in the same vertical, you know, for you, it's ticketing and travel, or they have a similar business model like a marketplace. You talk to them about, well, what else should we be expecting? Whether that's, hey, our company is going to be adding a loyalty program. What other types of fraud should we be expecting there? Or, okay, we're off the fraud monitoring programs. This is where we're at. You know, this is the type of fraud we're looking at, but we haven't really had account takeover fraud yet. We haven't had account-based fraud. What should we be worried about there? And talking with your peers that have already gone through this phase is so important. And, you know, if you don't know those peers, then that is another place that a consultant should be able to help, where, or your fraud provider as well. Although, you know, you need to know that they have, you know, their own motives sometimes. And so, you know, asking them to introduce you to your competitors may or may not be the best thing, because they may need to be, you know, the vendor may require that they be in the room for those conversations, or they might provide you with only people who like their product, or, you know, who knows, right? But or using an organization, right? Like the MRC, to know who else can I talk to, who's in the fraud department at this competitive company. It sure looks like, you know, they got hit with fraud before us. And so hopefully they know what else we're missing, or what, you know, we're going to see soon, and be able to, you know, leverage those people and those conversations. It's so important. And it's a very good time to do it. You're right, Calvin. This is the phase where you start to go, okay, well, what am I missing? What do I not know? You know, and keep measuring those KPIs, because they will change. And, you know, they're going in a great direction now, but when you start to see them going in the wrong direction, that's when you've got to, you know, enter the next phase, or that's when you know you've entered the next phase, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's why they call this the inflection point, right? Because the rate of acceleration starts changing.
Yeah.
The next phase is what we know as the maturity phase, which is the upward bend of the S-curve. So eventually, after a particular point, the rate of payoff slows down as the technology reaches its peak performance. The technology becomes widely adopted. Incremental enhancements become more and more challenging and more expensive. Marginal improvements become more difficult. So it's still positive, but it's the rate of marginal returns starts diminishing at this point of time. So in the fraud prevention unit, I think like what we see in these conditions is that the composition of fraudsters targeting your marketplace or the platform evolve, and it becomes more and more challenging to pass the fraud controls. So what fraudsters do is they rely on systemic loopholes where the fraud prevention is not as effective, instead of trying to fool the model through innovative tactics. So I think this is a key area, like kind of like have robust controls in place. You have the models and the rules doing their jobs, but the fraudsters are getting smart and they're trying to bypass the set of model or the fraud prevention engines that you have. And this is a sign that like you need more than just the models. You need more alerting, more automation, more predictability of what kind of fraudsters can hit us, to make sure that you're prepared for the next attack and you deploy the right solutions in place to avoid incurring huge losses from these kinds of attacks.
You said something that I really want to drill in on a little bit, you know, that they move from trying to trick the system with, you know, fraudulent information, with data that's different or wrong, you know, or stolen data to look like they're a legitimate customer, to attacking the system. And that's something that we've talked a lot about in the podcast, especially with Nate Carl, the CEO of Spec. He has been on a couple times talking about how they're seeing various systems be attacked, right? Whether it be race condition attacks or timing attacks, how they're seeing the systems being attacked, or a lot of times it's at the point of implementation or integration with APIs solutions, and that, you know, bots and other types of automated scripts are attacking the system itself and the point of integration, or being able to determine how a company is, what a company thinks is risky based on a race condition attack, different things like that. And that's been really eye-opening to me over the last year, is that they're no longer just trying to get in with tricking the system. You know, they're trying to actually attack the system. And that's something that a company isn't going to see until they've raised the bar. You know, a fraudster is only going to go as high as the bar they need to. Yeah. They're only going to invest as much time and money into their own toolbox as they need to. So it, when when you're at that first stage, to them, it's fairly easy, right? They can get through with stolen data. But once you've got, you know, better solutions in place and you're really on top of things, now they realize stolen data isn't enough and they need to actually attack the systems. And there are some third-party vendors that are more open to this than others, that are more open to attacks than others. There are more, you know, types of internal systems that are more vulnerable to these system attacks than others. And so knowing that and being prepared for that and working with, you know, a solution provider that can provide you with those insights, that can, you know, provide you with a 360 degree view of what's happening every time somebody enters your website, you know, from the session data and all of that, is critical once you're at that point, because you've raised the bar. So now the fraudsters have to too, and they're getting more complex and harder to identify. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I can add one more thing on there, Carice. We talk about systems, but I think you've also spoken a lot about processes. Yeah. This is also a point in time where they may target the company's processes, which are often outside of fraud, mm-hmm. right? So it might be a process in customer services that's not necessarily well informed.
Refunds
yep. is something you talk a lot about, right?
That's the yeah. first thing that came to my mind.
I think that's a great example.
You're right. Yeah, attacking the process too, and whether it's, you know, refund fraud or other types of processes. That's a really good point. They're not just attacking the systems, they're attacking the processes that are outside of fraud. And so that's, again, when having those relationships with other departments come in handy, because they may not think of you right away, right? When refund fraud first started being a thing, every other department was looking at supply chain or looking at, you know, shipping carriers and thinking that it was a problem there. When really, once somebody said, hey, fraud team, do you know what's going on here? Why is everybody claiming that they didn't get their item when they did, you know, when everything we have says that they did? Oh, it's a new kind of fraud. You know, so having those relationships and building that credibility for them to come to you and say, hey, we're seeing something that's odd and that's, you know, out of normal behavior. Our KPIs on the refund claims or whatever that piece is, you know, on our buyer side or our seller side, you know, on our seller side, we're seeing a change over here or something like that. Then all of a sudden, you know, you can get brought in and chances are you can be the hero and add and earn more credibility. But they're not going to think to ask you about those things if there's not a good relationship there, if you haven't already built that credibility.
Yeah, totally. And I think I can maybe nice segue into a few of our kind of advice and tips on this part. So I think one of those is, at this stage, you should be spreading awareness, right? At this point in time, depending on the size of your company, other teams should know that there exists a fraud team. They should understand what their scope is. They should have this awareness at some basic levels of what is fraud, what does fraud look like in our company, what does risk look like, and they should have escalation paths that they can be able to access their fraud prevention specialists. Of course, you need to control those because you don't want your teams inundated with invalid requests by, let's say, aspirational people like myself back in the day. Ooh, everything looks like fraud.
Yes.
And we just send it to these guys, right? But seriously, I think that's something that at this phase, you want to have a good setup where people know who you are and what you do. And similarly, I think at this point, you want to step away from just looking at financial fraud prevention only, if that's your focus. I mean, there are cyber teams as well that might be looking at different risks. But in general, you want to take a more holistic view of fraud prevention. So like in this view, the process that's being affected might not fall under your remit, but you can help, right? So it's taking that holistic view of how do we strengthen our platform against fraudsters. Let's not focus on what our team does, financial losses only, because we know how fraudsters behave. They will feed on your platform. They will start by attacking one thing for data, but then they realize they can attack it for payment fraud. They're going to do that too. And then they're going to combine these as well. So in this phase, you want to have that holistic view, and you don't just want to look at your only KPI should not be isolated to what you're doing. You have to have an understanding of the other impacts of fraud. How does it affect our brand? How does it affect trust? The customers that we have today and the customers that we don't have, the customers of tomorrow, are they reading about us in the news? That's not what we're going to want, right?
Yeah, it's such a good point. And these are all very important, that the true cost of fraud is far beyond payment fraud and chargebacks. It's the brand trust. And that is something that your brand is synonymous with trust. And that that's a true testament to your whole teams. You know, there are some companies that are not synonymous with trust, that, you know, every day they're in the headline for either a data breach or credential stuffing or other types of attacks that to everyday customers just look like bad security. I think fraudsters and customers, they don't see the lines between cybersecurity and fraud prevention and customer service. They don't see those buckets. They just, you know, fraudsters are just looking for any gap to exploit, and customers are just looking for the company that they can trust. And so to your point of looking holistically across all of those and not just saying, oh, that's not my job, or that's not my area of expertise, or that's not what I'm responsible for. Knowing how those KPIs are actually impacted by lots of different types of departments and working together is going to be the way that you're going to be able to tackle things like brand trust and being able to tackle things like, you know, the security of the overall site. And people's overall experience, right? Like for you guys, you have people who have real life experiences in the real world, right? They're making purchases digitally, but they have real life experiences. So knowing that somebody can place a booking for a, you know, resort or a hotel or you know, somebody's house or whatever it is on your website, and know and trust that when they get there in a few months to this town that they've never been to before, they can know and trust that they have a place to stay. Those stakes are high. So, you know, you've really got to be thinking about that. It's not as simple as just saying, oh, we want them to trust our brand. It's we want them to trust us that when they make a booking, they have a place to stay when they get to that foreign country. That's huge. Those stakes are high. Join me on March 20th at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern for an interactive demo of the Spec platform. It's a no-pressure zone where you can see our sponsor, ask questions anonymously, and if you're interested, set up a meeting to learn even more about them on your own. Spec's customers have been raving about the visibility their platform provides to see everything your customers and fraudsters do on your website from the moment they open a session. Their customers also enjoy watching the reseller bots and AI bots that usually go undetected by cybersecurity bot detection get caught in a honey trap. And they appreciate the ability to connect internal and external APIs to create workflows and connect to other fraud providers, all without any engineering resources, because Spec connects to your network rather than the other way around. Honestly, there's even more that you can do on the Spec platform, but it's so much better to see for yourself. That's why I'm hosting an opportunity for fraud practitioners to anonymously attend a demonstration of their platform. That's on March 20th at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you click the link in the episode description to register today.
Yeah, definitely. And in line with what Calvin mentioned about like moving away from just financial fraud prevention to a more comprehensive approach,
yeah,
I think it's also important to avoid overly optimizing at this particular stage, right? You should start changing your mindset from doing things right, which is known as reformation, to doing the right thing, which is transformation. I'm kind of quoting Peter Drucker here, but the idea is try to understand what's right for the future needs of your company and try to break down the paradigm paralysis, start exploring new technologies, process innovations, and transformation objectives to jump to the next wave of your fraud S-curve. And agile organizations are better equipped to identify early warning signals of stagnation and saturation and pivot towards innovative solutions more quickly that helps them tackle the needs for the future.
Yeah, and being agile and being a technology-first company is critical for all of these extra steps, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can move on to the next phase. By the way, I nicknamed the maturity phase the boring phase because things kind of work well, less exciting. No one's necessarily celebrating you at this point in time. But it's still better than the saturation phase, which Sriram can talk a little bit more about.
Yeah, definitely. In maturity phase, you still reap the benefits of your previous investments. But once you start hitting the saturation phase, I think it's time to move on to the next fraud S-curve. So the next stage is the end of the S-curve, the flat end of the S-curve, known as the saturation phase, where the technology reaches the saturation, where further improvements yield diminishing returns. And alternative technologies might emerge in this scenario, leading to a decline or replacement of the original technology. Mm. So what does it look like in the fraud prevention world? Like, how do you know you're in the saturation phase? So you'll start noticing that your metrics start to flatten or even deteriorate. fraudsters have likely figured out ways to bypass your controls, or the nature of fraud would have changed that your controls are no longer as effective as previous. Mm-hmm. Vendor solutions may already start reaching agreed optimization SLAs, so there is also little incentive for them to improve beyond the agreed performance benchmarks that you agreed maybe 2 or 3 years before. So I think like these are signals that you have reached the tail end of your fraud S-curve, and it's high time that you actually start moving on to the next technology or process innovation that makes you start giving incremental payoffs to all your investments in people and processes and product.
Yeah, it's almost like the end of this S is probably the beginning of the next S, right? And I have a frustration with solution providers in this point of, you know, they've reached their SLA and they've done their job of what they were hired for 3 years ago. So therefore, I think that a lot of technology vendors also, their company life cycle is on an S curve, unfortunately. I've seen several of those play out that way, where, you know, because of investments, because of investors, because of, you know, different things, they also get stagnant and they aren't upping their game, and fraudsters find ways to beat them. And they just are basically, they're reliant on the fact that their customers, their merchants, or their banks aren't looking at this as an S curve and aren't looking for, okay, we're now, our KPIs are lower, we're okay, but we're starting to reach this point of stagnation. We're starting to reach this point of not having as many, you know, we're having diminishing returns, right? We're not having as high of returns as we were having. Okay, we're going to go to the next phase. What's that next product that can, you know, fill the gap here? And those vendors that operate on an S curve and just kind of stay on that last point, they're hoping that their customers aren't looking at things that way, right? They're hoping that their customers are saying, okay, well, we got rid of the really, really bad fraud and we're not in the first phase anymore. We're probably more in like, we're more mature than that. So we're good. We're just going to stay. And it frustrates me that, you know, the solution providers themselves are not saying, okay, we need to keep adapting and growing and moving. Because if your solution provider is adapting and moving and growing and you're relying on them and you're not, you don't have the internal, you know, core system that you guys have the luxury of, well, then you may never actually reach this phase, because your solution provider is always innovating and realizing, oh, it's our system that's being attacked now. Let's try to go on the offense. Or, oh, it's your processes. Well, here, we'll provide you with guidance. We'll provide you with consultants to help you, you know, do better and know how to be better. I think that, you know, because of the market, in a way, some providers create this part. That is a rant of mine, so I apologize. I'll take a small step off of my soapbox, but it's frustrating for me to be on the sidelines and see it play out every day and to hear some of the same companies, you know, mentioned over and over.
I think you obviously have a lot of exposure to this side of things, right? So
and passion because of that exposure. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe I can add two more points here in terms of what maybe one's a characteristic of this phase, but the other one is something to be aware of. I'll start with what you should be aware of. There's a difference between the saturation phase and that initial phase when things are on fire.
That's a good point.
When things are on fire, yeah, there's some expectations internally that are very different. So your stakeholders don't expect a whole lot from you at that stage. They're complaining to you, but they also are going to recognize, well, we don't have a mature team, we don't have tools, etc. In this phase, you've probably by now invested quite a lot, you've built up a team, etc. The expectations are going to be different on you. So if you start on the performing and if these metrics start deteriorating, not only are stakeholders it's going to be challenging with relationships, but also the business at this point is likely building things off of the profitability that they've introduced through fraud prevention and through positive customer experience by you not rejecting a bunch of transactions, right? So you should definitely be aware of this. You don't want that to become a problem. Another thing here is something that you need to look at as a risk as well, and a characteristic in this phase is your people strategy, because ultimately things are built and maintained by people within your teams, whether it's GPMs, ops managers. We're not really the guys doing the work. For example, there's an army of very skilled people within your teams that are building and innovating. Now, if you're a few years in and there are no challenges that keep these people excited, you might suffer from attrition, or if you're not growing your people and developing them, just like you mentioned, Carice, about the fraud vendors you work with. You also have to have your people developing the skills to catch the next wave of innovation, to drive the next wave of innovation, right? So this is something to be aware of in this phase as well.
Oh, thank you for that. What tips do you have for people that have found as you're describing this phase, that's where we're at. What are some tips that you have for them?
Ideally, at this point, you should already start diversifying your bets on a different technology or a process innovation that helps you catch the next S-curve. I would say like the journey towards adopting a new technology should already start when you're in the previous state, which is the maturity state, because you look for signs and you start investing in areas and try to test the waters with what works best for your business model, right? So this should be definitely one that you should focus on, because otherwise you start seeing decline in performance, and that's when I think like it becomes too late to actually catch the next wave of your fraud S-curve. Another thing that I wanted to highlight is like when you embrace a new technology, there would be a reduced payoff than what you have with your saturation model, and there is a slight drop in performance because of that. And this is normal, right? Whenever you actually have a new technology or a new process that you're adopting, the performance will not be at the same level, but it can grow quickly because it's part of a new S-curve now. And I think like if you invest in the right direction, if you invest in the right areas and you have the right success metrics defined, you will be able to see the payoff increasing over time, and eventually you'll be better off catching the next wave instead of staying on the current S-curve. So just wanted to share like that is an important tip when you're in the saturation phase. Like don't stay complacent, just like make sure that like you're investing and diversifying all your options and investing in the right areas, experimenting with a lot of things, and identifying what works best for your business.
Yeah, and that's what Sriram was saying earlier. I think you were saying, Carice, like PMs, right? Sriram is just basically saying you should hire some PMs to tell this story.
Yeah.
But that seriously, the tip here is, yes, you do need to ensure that you have that buy-in. So the PMs or the strategists in your team, whoever you have, they need to be able to tell that story, and that S-curve vision needs to align with the key stakeholders so that they give you that leeway. They understand that we may see a temporary blip, a temporary drop in performance, but we're going to get the next wave. This is the cost of moving upwards again, right?
Yeah, definitely. And explaining that to leadership and management, I think it's kind of like what PMs do. They can justify like why this is beneficial in the long run, but it's a short-term sacrifice that we're making right now. So definitely, I think like that's a big role that PMs play in this scenario. And also like the PMs, I would expect the PMs to already start finding out like signals of degradation even before you hit saturation, and already making those diversified bets early on to make sure that like you already know which technology or which process innovation you're going to adopt and gain benefits from that.
Those are all such good points. And, you know, again, working with your key stakeholders and being able to, you know, say, hey, this is what we're starting to see. We're going to diversify those bets. We're going to, you know, do this and that and the other, and, you know, maybe look for a third party vendor that maybe isn't your core vendor, but maybe, you know, can enhance things either upstream or downstream. You know, maybe they can provide you with more visibility, more data. Maybe they can provide you with a certain step up, you know, multi-factor authentication if needed, or, you know, for security or other pieces like that. You don't necessarily have to rip and replace your core vendor, but looking at what are some solutions that we can do to enhance, you know, and make things better, either to make fraud go down or make customer friction go down.
Yeah, definitely. Agree with you, Grace.
This has been such a fun conversation. I'm almost bummed that it's, you know, starting to come to a close, but I really appreciate you both, you know, taking time out of your very busy days to come explain how you approach this and help provide a new perspective and a new way of looking at this to the Fraudology audience. I think that it's really important and helpful to always be looking at things in a new way and to learn from each other. That's my goal of the podcast, is, you know, to share information with each other. And, you know, maybe it's not exactly something that you guys did, but it's as you're talking, somebody thinks of, oh yeah, we are kind of getting stagnant in this. Maybe we can do this or that. And it spurs on more opportunities and more examples. That's how innovation happens. And that's how we can, you know, not be stagnant in our approach and not let the fraudsters win. Is there anything else as this conversation comes to an end that you'd like, that either of you would like to add?
I think, yeah, I can add one last point, which is, look, this is just, imagine this as an overlaid framework. Everyone is working how they're working right now. You don't need to reinvent things. What we're saying is take this perspective, like zoom out and ask yourself, if you did draw this S-curve line, where are you today? Relate to some of the characteristics, the things that we talked about. Figure out where you are and then ask yourself if you actually have a plan. If you don't know where you are at all, well, maybe call Carice. But if you do know where you are, if you know where you are and our tips kind of help, maybe you can take those, relate to it, and develop a strategy and see if actually speaking in this language with your stakeholders helps.
Yeah, well, and just for clarity, I did not pay Calvin ahead of time, and I wasn't planning on, you know, maybe now I have to buy him a drink when we're in Vegas to put a plug in for me. But certainly, sometimes I've definitely noticed that sometimes an outside perspective can be helpful, looking at your data and just saying, hey, have you tried this? And someone who knows, who has worked with other companies and who knows what works and what doesn't work, and who's already taken the guesswork out of which vendors their customers love and which vendors, you know, oftentimes people are complaining about. Those can be some, you know, really good things. So just making sure that you're working with a consultant that has those things, that has worked with multiple different companies at different stages. That's what I would say would be important if you're going that route. If not, you know, maybe you're hiring internally for someone who has already done this, building from the ground up and going through all these iterations. But I'm glad that you mentioned this is a, you know, an overlay, right? This is another perspective to add. And I think too often we are so focused on the micro, we're so focused on what's in front of our face that we don't take time to zoom out and look at that perspective of where are we now and where are we going to be. And, you know, while fraud prevention is still relatively new compared to other industries, we have enough of a history to know that there really is a fraud S-curve. And, you know, we know enough, and enough companies have gone through it at least once or twice to know what to expect. And so I really appreciate you, you know, both coming in and sharing your experiences. Shriyam, do you have anything to add to this?
So I think, like, I just wanted to share, like, this kind of framework. This is not something that we design at the beginning and then we execute it after
right.
that. It's kind of the opposite, right? Like,
yeah.
We kind of, like, did a lot of things. We made a bunch of mistakes. We made a bunch of things right. And then we kind of learned in retrospect that, like, having such a framework kind of can be helpful for other merchants who are trying to do the same things as us to create a long-term strategy. And this is something that probably, we never thought of, like, having, like, this approach. But I think, like, when we look at the history of what we have done and, like, what we have produced over time, like, learning from the mistakes, this is something that, like, more and more fraud teams should do and understand, like, how their ecosystem really is. And it gives them a lot of opportunities for improving the state that they are in and kind of understanding what the next stage is based on the fraud risk curve. So yeah, so like my suggestions to everyone, like all the fraud fighters over there, would be to, like, build out your own fraud S-curve and see, like, how it panned out for you from your historical perspective, and see how you can make changes to the way you actually work to ensure that you are protecting your customers from fraudsters, at the same time also making sure that you're creating the best experience for your good customers.
It's really good advice, and it's good to know that, you know, it wasn't a roadmap that you created, you know, for yourself, or you didn't say, okay, we're going to go on this way. It was more retroactively looking back going, oh, okay, you know, we thought that we were just going from point A to point B, but actually we took this longer route and our trajectory wasn't just a straight line, it was an S. And then learning that from going forward, that's such, you know, such good insight and makes complete sense. And I think also gives people a little bit of realistic hope that it's all a bunch of trial and error, but, you know, the more experience that we collectively have, the better we will be.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you both so much for your time, your expertise. I'm going to include a link to both of your profiles on LinkedIn in the show notes if anyone wants to reach out to you. I always say no solicitations, please. This is not a time, you know, for vendors to reach out, but other fraud fighters. And also, you're both going to be at the MRC conference, March 25th to the 28th in Las Vegas. So excited about that. I have not met either of you in person, just lots of Zoom calls. And so I'm really looking forward to that as well. And for anyone that's attending, I hope that they keep an eye out for both of you. And there might be a chance that you may be presenting as well. So if that happens, they should definitely see your presentation and your talk track. And just thanks so much. I really appreciate both of you. And I hope that you both will come back again. This was such a fun combo.
Likewise, Carice. Thank you for your time, and it was great catching.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carice. Bye.
Again to Sardine for sponsoring this episode of Fraudology and for supporting information sharing and collaboration across the fraud fighter ecosystem. You can learn more about the team and their mission at Sardine via the link in today's episode description.